This is a production of Money Honey Media. All advice in this podcast is general in nature. It should not be applied to your personal circumstances without first discussing with a tax professional.
Hi, I'm Jay McCauley, and this is the Accidental Bookkeeper podcast brought to you by Jigsaw Tax and Advisory, where I have fun unpacking the boring but necessary things you need to know to run your small business. On this week's Table of Knowledge, I'm going to talk about probably the most boring thing in the world, which is fringe benefits tax. It is the new fringe benefits tax year, which means we have to start getting ready to do the old fringe benefits tax returns. No one has any understanding of why we do fringe benefits tax returns or how they calculate things or anything to do with it. So today I thought I would do a table of knowledge to try and briefly explain fringe benefits tax to those of you who are listening. If I've already lost you, feel free to turn off and listen to another episode. But if it does seem relevant to you, it's probably really good for you to listen to try and understand what fringe benefits tax is, because it's probably one of the more confusing taxes out there. And you will probably find as a business owner, you are providing fringe benefits to your employees that you are probably not reporting, and maybe it's something you need to think about. Okay. So fringe benefits tax was introduced into Australia in 1986. It was first touted in a draft white paper in 1985. And I remember that draft white paper very well because at the time I was in high school doing economics. And we really talked about that draft white paper a fair bit. In that draft white paper, they first mentioned the idea of a consumption tax, which is, of course, a GST tax. That never came around. But as a result of the white paper, we did end up with capital gains tax and fringe benefits tax. So a fringe benefits tax was first introduced in to Australia on the 1st of July 1986 with the introduction of the Fringe Benefits Tax Assessment Act 1986, otherwise known as the FBT Act. So what is fringe benefits tax? So, well, first of all, I guess we've got to know what is a fringe benefit. So a fringe benefit is a payment to an employee, but it's not the same kind of payment as salary or wages. So essentially some sort of benefit or thing that is given to a staff member. So employee is very important here. You have to be an employee to get a fringe benefit. It's not something that you're providing to a customer, or if you're a sole trader, you are not actually able to provide it to yourself either. So just be aware of that, or a partner in a partnership. So it needs to be provided to an employee. And so essentially it's a benefit that is getting paid that is not getting paid as a wage. So prior to this, what we were finding is that people, so back in 1985 and earlier, people were getting paid in ways that were starting to become quite inventive, I guess. So we used to have the high executives who would get, you know, a probably still relatively good salary, but they would also get a really nice car. They would maybe get their house paid for, so they might have their loan repayments being made, or they might be provided with free accommodation by their employer if they were moving from state to state or country to country. They would also possibly have their school fees paid for their children. They would probably have their private health insurance paid. So there'd be all these other benefits that their employer would be getting. And, of course, prior to 1985, there was what was known as the long lunch. Now, I did start working in 1987 and beyond that, and I still remember lots of long lunches back in those days. You know, essentially people would, the high executives would go out and get on the piss, eat lots of food and pay lots of money for it, and all of that was a tax deduction to the business that they were working for. Now, that didn't sort of just disappear, because I'm sure that still continues today, although occupational health and safety probably winds back the amount of alcohol you can drink while you're on one of these long lunches. So, yeah, so they brought in this tax and basically said what we're going to do is look at all of the fringe benefits that are being provided to staff members and we're going to apply a tax to that. Now, the tax is actually applied to the employer, not to the employee. So, which is to prevent the employer from really trying to give these benefits, if that makes sense. So there is a tax implication to the employee in some respects, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but the tax is actually levied on the employer. And the tax is levied at a rate of 47%, which is the highest marginal tax rate, including Medicare. So essentially, if you're paying someone on the highest marginal tax rate and they are getting a fringe benefit, the value of that benefit would be no different to them being paid salary. So there's not really this big incentive to use fringe benefits if you, because the tax, like there's no tax advantage in that because they're going to be assessed as if they're being paid in normal way anyway, except that the tax will be paid by the employer, not the employee. So how does it work? So if we have a benefit, and we'll talk about the different benefits that are out there in a minute. So let's say we've given our staff member a benefit of $10,000. Now, it could be many different things that it is, but we've assessed that the benefit that they're getting is $10,000. To work out the tax, what they do is they gross that $10,000 up. So they look at whether the benefit has a GST implication on it or not. So again, it depends what the benefit is. And based on that, there's two different gross up rates. So gross up rate type one is for those benefits that have had GST on it, because the company will have claimed that GST back. So the gross up rate for that is 2.0802. And the gross up rate for things that don't have GST on them is 1.8868. So there is a formula that calculates all of this, but trust me, they're the rates. So if you have a benefit of about $10,000 and we gross that up by 2.0802, that means the benefit is going to be around $20,000 with a little bit on top of that, but let's just say $20,000 for the ease of it. And then that $20,000 will be taxed at 47%. So essentially the tax on the benefit is almost the same as the benefit itself. Doesn't mean people don't provide fringe benefits, but it does mean that there is a tax to pay on them, and it does make employers start to think, well, is this something I really need to, you know, to give my staff member? Would it be better if they just found these things themselves and I paid them a little bit of extra salary to have, you know, them just being normally within the tax system? Okay, so there is an implication to the person who is receiving the benefit, and that is that if that benefit is more than $2,000, and that's the total amount, not the grossed up amount, the total amount is $2,000, then it should be reported on their PAYG payment summary that there is that reportable fringe benefit. Now, you don't get taxed on the reportable fringe benefit, so you won't actually pay income tax on it if you have got a reportable fringe benefit. But what you will get taxed on is other things that will come into that will come into play for other things. So it will come into play, for example, as to whether you have gone over a Medicare surcharge threshold. It will come into play as to whether you've gone over a HECS debt threshold. It will also be taken into account for things like family tax benefit and childcare rebates. So just be aware that even though you're getting a fringe benefit and you're not paying income tax on it, you may find that you actually are paying a sort of tax in some way by missing out on something that you would otherwise be getting. And don't forget, that's grossed up. So often we find people going, oh, but, you know, I just got this and it's only worth, let's say they had got a $10,000 fringe benefit. The reportable fringe benefit would be that $20,000 amount that we've grossed up. So that's included in their income tests for these things. So sometimes that can become quite a bit of a disadvantage to the person, because if they had just got paid the $10,000 in the first instance, that's all that would have been assessed. Okay, there is a difference for not-for-profits. So there are some not-for-profits that have this special exemption with regard to FBT. Or it's a special concessional treatment, essentially. These do have legislation around them, and there are caps on what they are. So if you work for a public benevolent institution, you can get a cap of $30,000 worth of benefit, and that that you can also get a $5,000 entertainment benefit as well. So there's also a benefit for people who work in public hospitals, not-for-profit hospitals and public ambulance services, and theirs is capped at $17,000. And then there's also other rebatable employers, which are certain registered charities, non-government and not-for-profit organisations, and they also can get that $30,000 cap of benefits. So if you do happen to be working for one of these organisations, or you know of someone who is and they're getting this special fringe benefit, it's because they're working for a particular type of business, and it's not available to everyone else like myself. So we can't have this $30,000 cap. If we have a fringe benefit that we provide our staff, we will pay tax on it. But because these people are non-profits or public hospitals, they don't pay the fringe benefits tax. They're allowed to package up their staff's pay, but they don't actually pay the fringe benefits tax so long as they don't go over those caps. Now, there's a lot of different types of fringe benefits, and the one that most people think of straight away is the car, and we'll talk about that at the end. But I just want to go through some of the other ones that are actually listed, because fringe benefits are not just limited to cars. So one of the ones that people don't often think about is interest-free loans or debt waivers to staff members. So if we have a loan that is either interest-free or low interest that we're giving to a staff member, and that could include ourselves, that is actually considered a fringe benefit. Each year the ATO provide a statutory rate, and that's what they consider to be the rate of interest that you should be charging on these loans to consider that they are not interest-free or low interest. If you were charging lower than that rate, then whatever that differential is the fringe benefit you're providing your employee. Now, for the year that we're just about to end, the 31st of March 2024, the rate is 7.77%. For the next financial year, that rate's already been set at 8.77%. So we need to make sure that we're benchmarking any interest, any loans that we're providing to people to these interest rates. Another type of fringe benefit is just simply an expense payment. So if we're paying some sort of expense payment to our staff member and it's got nothing to do with work, we can't do that. So this is the sort of thing that, you know, people could look at. Often we see people go, well, you know what, I'm going to buy my staff member, I'm going to pay for their petrol this year, even though I don't provide them with a car, just to give them a bit of benefit, or I'm going to give them gift cards instead of so they could provide, or they might reimburse certain expenses that are not related to work. So if it's a tax deductible expense, that's different. But if it's something that's not related to work, it might be a travel expense that's just purely a holiday. Those sorts of things are considered a fringe benefit. Housing fringe benefits and living away from home is another one. So you can't provide your staff member with a rent-free accommodation, or you can't pay for their mortgage or anything like that. Living away from home has a whole lot of information about it. I won't go into that too much, but we see that people used to be able to package up if they moved from state to state. They might get a special allowance to be living away from their normal place of residence. That's really been tightened up over the last few years, and the legislation has changed quite significantly in regard to that. Now, you can get a living away from home allowance for a small period of time, but you have to maintain your existing residence to get that. So that's probably a bit different to your fly-in, fly-out workers type stuff, but again, there is a limit to the period of time that you can do that. So a very complicated part of the law, and I just want to confirm to everyone that fringe benefits is in very, very complicated part of the law, so I'm not going to go into the details of everything. Airline benefits is another one, and this is particularly for people who work in that industry. So if you're working in the airline industry or the travel industry and you get free holidays, that can be considered a fringe benefit. Board, so board is when people are paying benefits for you to be away from home. Again, it's kind of tied in with that living away from home allowance. If the company is paying you a board allowance to be somewhere, then that could potentially be a fringe benefit. Entertainment. Now, this is a very big one, and we've talked about this a few times on the show. paying for entertainment for your staff member is considered a fringe benefit. This includes things like paying for meals. It could involve things like taking your team to a conference. Taking your team away for a weekend away to have a bit of fun. It could be going to a concert. It could be all sorts of things, going to the footy. Again, there's limits on how much we're talking about, and there's lots of rules around this, but just be aware that entertainment can definitely be considered a fringe benefit. Car parking. Now, if you have are providing your staff member with car parking and you're paying for the parking, and there are other, like, it's in an area where parking is a paid thing. So where I work right now, no one pays to park their car in Norwest. So there's no fringe benefit to my staff members having a car park here. But if I was working in the city and I was providing them with a car park, that would be a fringe benefit because other people have to pay to park their car in the city. And then property fringe benefits. So again, property fringe benefits are things like could be anything. In fact, I will give you the definition of what a property fringe benefit is. So a property fringe benefit is defined by the word property, which includes goods, including gas and electricity, unless provided through a property fringe benefit is can include goods, including gas and electricity, animals, real property such as land and buildings, rights to property such as shares and bonds. So essentially any kind of goods that might be being bought for you that are not for work-related purposes, that can be considered a property fringe benefit. So there's lots of things that can come into it. Essentially, if your business is providing some sort of thing to you that's a benefit to you that's not work-related and it's not wages, then they're going to be it's going to be bought into the system. So there's a whole lot of things that go into calculating all of this stuff, and that's why cars are probably the most common one and probably also quite complicated. So essentially there's two different types of cars that we can look at. We can look at a car that's a car and a car that's a non-car. And that's all based on the size of the car and what kind of car it is. So if you have a ute which has more than 1 ton carrying capacity, that's a non-car. It's not a car. So it has a different regime to what my car has with regard to fringe benefits. Okay, the main difference between a car and a non-car is what's considered work-related travel. So if you have a non-car, such as a ute, travelling to and from work is actually considered to be work-related travel, whereas if you have a car, like I do, driving to the office is not work-related travel. Now, there are a whole lot of rules around all of this stuff. Lots and lots of them. And there are parts of the Fringe Benefits Tax Act about exempt benefits, and they can include things like if you have a car that is only allowed to be work-related travel, but you might occasionally, and particularly if it's a ute, but you might occasionally take it, you know, a trip to dump some rubbish at the tip like once a year, which is just incidental to the fact that you have this car or this ute all the time, then there may be an exemption on that. But most people who have business cars do tend to use their cars for more than business work, business-related travel. In fact, if it is being housed at your house, it's probably available for private use, even if you're not using it. So there's a whole lot of different things that come into this calculation. When it comes to cars, we have two ways of looking at the fringe benefit. The first way is a very simple one, which is looking at the cost of the car, and each year we apply the fringe benefit of being 20% of the cost of the car. So if that car cost you $40,000, 20% of that is $8,000, and so $8,000 will be the implied fringe benefit. Now, either you can contribute that money back in or get the staff member to contribute that money back into the account of the bank, into the business to account for that fringe benefit. And sometimes this is done through pre and post tax contributions as salary packaging ways of doing it, or the employer pays the tax on that $8,000. Now, that's the statutory method. We find for most businesses who are self-owned businesses, that is still an effective way of taking care or of accounting for a car in a company, particularly for the owners of the company. The 20% usually doesn't exceed the amount of the depreciation and other expenses that are going to be paid for on behalf of that car. However, a car does have a limit on how much we can claim with regard to depreciation and interest and all of those sorts of things. And every year the ATO sets that car limit rate. Now, it's currently sitting at around $68,000, which means that if you went and bought a car now, you are able to claim GST up to the $68,000 mark. It's not exactly $68,000, but it's around that number. And you also can claim depreciation up to that amount. But when it comes to fringe benefits tax, that they don't care whether they don't look at that amount at all. They look at the amount of the cost of the car. So if you've bought a car for $150,000, we're going to have to claim the 20% of the cost of the car based on the full price of the car, which is going to be very big, and the depreciation you're going to get on the other side of it, which is limited to that $68,000 mark, will not make it any. There's not going to be any particular benefit you having that come up, that car in your company. So just be aware of that, and you probably should talk to your tax agent about where is the best place for your car to be if you're going to be buying something that's really expensive. I also just want to reiterate that fringe benefits tax only applies to employees. So if you are buying a car for your sole trader business or your partnership business, it's not going to apply to you, and you will only have the option of the logbook method to calculate how much use your car has. So that 20% method is not relevant if you are not an employee of your company or trust. So if you're a sole trader, you cannot use this fringe benefit stuff at all. The other method we have is the logbook method, where you must keep a logbook and it must be representative of the travel that you've been doing, and it should be kept at the same time that any other cars in the company are keeping logbooks, particularly if they're available for you to drive. And it should also, there's a whole bunch of things. It needs to be kept for at least 3 months. So there's all sorts of things involved in that. But if you do have a genuine logbook and we do have a genuine usage, we can use that to calculate our fringe benefit. Again, there is a calculation involved in that, but we do find that if it is a genuine, good usage logbook, it will be a more effective calculation. So we would look at how much petrol has been paid on behalf of that car and work out the percentage that is not business related. Let's say your logbook was 80%, 20% of the business expenses would be considered the fringe benefit. So 20% of the amount of petrol you use, 20% of the amount of rego insurance, 20% of the implied interest. And again, we would still have to imply that there's interest, even though you may not have a loan on it. And 20% of the depreciation. So all of those things will come into play, and we'll work out the fringe benefit and calculate it that way. So car fringe benefits are the thing we'll probably be contacting most of our clients about very soon. We know what cars you have. How are we calculating the fringe benefit on those things? With a non-car, so if it's a ute, it's still the same. We can still use the same calculations. It's just how we do it is slightly different, and it is possible that a car that is, or a ute, sorry, that is really just being used for work is going to be exempt from fringe benefits tax. But we still have to do the calculation, and we still have to know that that is the case. So that just because you've got a ute does not mean it's exempt from fringe benefits. It can still have fringe benefits involved in it. It just means the calculation is possibly going to be a little bit lower. So please be aware that having a ute itself does not exempt you from fringe benefits. It just means the calculation will be a little bit different. So when we come out to our clients and ask them about their cars, we're also going to ask them about any other things that they think they might be providing. Most of those are going to be likely things such as interest-free loans to staff members, and also potentially entertainment. They're probably the biggest two that we find out there. Entertainment, I'm not going to talk about that today because it's so complicated, but please just be careful about what you are providing for your staff members. I've seen people who pay for gym memberships, as an example. That could be considered it probably will be considered a fringe benefit. So you're probably going to have to pay tax on that. So we will lodge a whole bunch of FBT returns over the next few weeks and months. We need to get those lodged pretty much by around May is around the lodgement date for those. So we'll be calculating all of those fringe benefits and letting people know. Now, for a lot of our clients, what we do is we use the contribution back method. So we work out the fringe benefit and then we recognise that the owner of the business has contributed that match back into their company. You pay GST on that contribution back, and we have to make sure there's no Division 7A loans that have been triggered as a result of that. So we may have to pay you a little bit more salary or draw you a dividend or something to cover that. But, you know, it sort of can be an effective method, but you do need to be warned that fringe benefits tax can also be very problematic and very complicated. So if you're thinking of anything that you can do to help your staff members not have to pay tax, just always be aware that fringe benefits is around and it may be seen as a problem. Okay, well, hopefully that's explained it a little bit. It is very complicated. I really, really recommend that you get some advice from a tax agent. And, you know, just reading through the stuff before when I went on to talk about this, there's so much information out there. And often it can be interpreted incorrectly. So please just try and get some proper information. Don't necessarily listen to what the guy at the pub is telling you about that you don't have to pay fringe benefits tax. It's also an area that I think the ATO are going to be looking at more and more in the future. It's an area that probably hasn't got the attention of the ATO as much as it could have, and given that they are ramping up activities with regard to audit, in particularly wage audit activities, if they do a wage audit activity, they're also going to be doing a fringe benefits tax audit activity. So, okay, well, hopefully that's helped you all. I hope you have a great week and a great weekend, should I say, and I will be back in your ears on Monday. Thank you. Please share us out with your friends and like us on Facebook and on Instagram and on your podcast platforms. And thanks, Joel, for producing this. Have a great weekend. Bye. Money Honey Media would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is recorded and produced. We pay our respects to elders both past, present, and future, and to all Aboriginal people who are listening to this podcast.